I ask you to join me in a rip, roaring welcome to the next president of the United States.
State of Washington, one of the bright new stars in the firmament of national politics, somebody who is passionate about creating the kinds of opportunities for every child in this state, who cares about creating good jobs and good wages in this state, who wants to make government efficient, make it cost effective, but also make sure that it is serving each and every individual in this state. I am so proud to have your governor on our team. Please give a big round of applause to Kristi Gregoire. Sit down, feel free. No? Oh, I just wanted to give you the chance.
That's great. I love that.
It has been just about a year.
Just about a year.
Since I stood on the steps of the old state capitol in Springfield, Illinois. A building where Abraham Lincoln served for most of his career before he went to Washington. In the city where I served as a state legislator before I became a United States Senator, I stood there and I announced this unlikely journey to change America. And I have to say that at the time, a lot of people asked me, why are you running this time? Why are you running so soon? You're a relatively young man. You can't afford to wait. And I had to explain to them, I am not running because of some long-held ambition. I know people have been looking through my kindergarten papers, but that's not why I decided to run. I am not running because I think it's somehow owed to me, because I think it's my turn. I am running because of what Dr. King called the fierce urgency of now. Because I believe there's such a thing as being too late. And that hour is almost upon us. We are at a defining moment in our history. Our nation is at war. Our planet is in peril. The dream that so many generations fought for feels like it's slowly slipping away. You see it in your own lives, in your own neighborhoods, your own communities. People working harder for less. They've never paid more for college, never paid more for a gallon of milk or gas at the pump. It's harder to save. It's harder to retire. Our healthcare system leaves millions without health insurance, and those who have it are seeing their deductibles and co-payments and premiums going up and up and up. Our school system, despite the slogans, leaves billions of children behind, unable to compete in this new global economy. In such a situation, we cannot afford to wait. We can't wait to fix our schools. We can't wait to fix our healthcare system. We can't wait to bring an end to global warming. We cannot wait to bring an end to this war in Iraq. We cannot wait. We cannot wait. When I decided to run, I said to myself, the size of these challenges have outstripped the capacity of a broken and divided politics to solve. I was convinced that the American people were hungry, were desperate for a different kind of politics. A politics that wasn't based on tearing each other down, but was based on lifting the country up. Politics that wasn't based on ideology, it was based on practicality, common sense. A politics not based on PR, and speak. But based on common sense and honesty and truthfulness, being straight with the American people, that's what I believe. Mainly, Seattle, I was betting on you. I was betting on the American people. Because some of you know I now live in Chicago, but I'm not originally from Chicago. I moved there after college when I was 24, 25 years old to work as an organizer. There's a group of churches there, and we worked together to help people who had been laid off of steel plants. Communities had been devastated. And it was the best education I ever had. Those 3.5 years working on the streets of Chicago, helping to set up job training programs, bring economic development to the communities, because it taught me ordinary people can do extraordinary things when they're given a chance. And so, I have always believed that change happens not from the top down, it happens from the bottom up. I am convinced that the American people are a decent and generous people, willing to work hard and to sacrifice on behalf of future generations. And I believe in my gut that if we could just join together across racial divisions, across gender divisions, young, old, rich, poor, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, if we could bring everybody together. Yes! If we could get those voices to challenge the special interests in Washington, to challenge the toxic politics that has become our custom, but also to challenge ourselves to be better, better citizens, better parents, better neighbors, that there was no problem we could not solve. There was no destiny we could not fulfill. That was the bet that I was making 1 year ago. And I am here to report, after crisscrossing the country for 12 months, after a whole lot of chicken dinners and a whole lot of town hall meetings and a whole lot of frequent flyer miles, I am here to report that my bet has paid off and my faith in the American people has been vindicated. But everywhere we go, it's not just the crowds. I mean, we've been seeing people listen to the debates and reading position papers. People are intensely engaged in this contest. People are really paying attention to what's going on right now. I mean, in Iowa, on the day of the caucus, I've been telling reporters, you know, I think young people are going to come out like never before. And the reporters... Come on, and then that night of the caucus, you saw college students and high school students streaming in and saying to me, Barack, we are so proud, so excited to participate for the first time in our lives. Because when I shake hands sometimes in the rallies, afterwards they whisper to me, they say, and I say, thank you. So there's a level of interest and excitement that we have not seen in a generation. Now, I would like to take all the credit for that. But I have to say, it's not just me. The fact is, people know that they will be selecting the next president in November, and that whatever else happens, when they go into that voting booth, the name George W. Bush will not be on the ballot. Woo! Dick Cheney will not be on the ballot. That was really embarrassing. That I was distantly related to Dick Cheney. But they do these genealogical surveys, you're hoping that you will be related to somebody cool. By Dick Cheney, that is a letdown. His name won't be on the ballot, so the era of Scooter Libby justice and Brownian confidence and Karl Rove politics will finally be over. But you know what, that's not the only reason you're here. You know, it's easy to be against something. But what people want to be is for something. We want to feel as if we can still join together and solve problems. Get things done on behalf of the American people, that our government is not just a contest for power, but it is a place of service. And I know this because, you know, I've been in a conversation with all of you, the American people, for 12 months. And you're anxious about your future, or at least your children's futures or your grandchildren's futures. The stories I hear all too often, they're stories of struggle and they're stories of hardship. All across this country, I meet people who've worked 20, 30 years in a factory. And suddenly the rug's pulled out from under them, the job is shipped overseas, they've lost their health care, they've lost their pension, they're trying to figure out how to make ends meet on a $7 an hour job at the local fast food joint. All across America, I mean teachers who are having to work a second job just to pay the rent, or who are having to dig into their own pockets to buy school supplies for their classroom. There are children all across America who are studying in schools that are outmoded, outdated, crumbling, without computers, without updated textbooks. And there's a school in South Carolina I visited where kids are learning in a building built in the 1800s. Some of them are in a trailer adjoining the school because many of the classrooms have collapsed. And they're by a railroad track, and every time the train goes by, the building shakes and the teacher has to stop teaching. And that's not just unique to South Carolina. They call it the corridor of shame in that region, but there are corridors of shame all across this country where our children are languishing. All across America, I meet young people who have the grades, the will, the desire to go to college, but they don't have the money. And if they borrow, then they've got $20, $30, $40, $50, $60, $70,000 worth of debt. They're in a hole before they even start their careers. All across America, I mean, workers who don't have health care, even though they're working full-time, some of them working two, three jobs, don't have health care. They may not be lucky enough to be a member of the great union, SEIU, that's in the house. Woo!
Yeah. Oh, it's good.
They're cleaning bedpans. They're looking after our grandparents. Doing all kinds of work that has to be done. And yet they can't get any care for themselves here in the wealthiest nation on earth. All across America, I meet veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who have served their country with distinction. They have done everything that's been asked of them. They are proud of their service. But these veterans wonder, what's happening to their buddies who are still there. And they question the wisdom of a mission that has cost us so dearly in blood and in treasure. And sometimes I meet disabled or homeless veterans who wonder how it is that their country could have forgotten their service. And sometimes in rope lines after rallies, I have to give a hug to a mom who weeps silently over the memory of a fallen son or a fallen daughter. And all across America, I meet young people, old people, people from all walks of life who are patriots. They are proud of this country. They love this country. But they don't understand how it is that our standing in the world has diminished so quickly. They don't understand how Abu Ghraib could have happened, or Guantanamo could have happened, or the suspension of habeas corpus could have happened. About whether or not the United States government engages in torture. They love this country, but they want their cherished values and ideals restored. That's what I'm hearing from the American people. They know we need to take a new direction. And I tell them I would not be running if I was not confident in my capacity to lead this country, to bring it together, to push against the special interests, to enlist the American people. But I have to remind folks, I can't do it by myself. We have had an extraordinary campaign. But you have to take us over the finish line. I cannot bring about change by myself. It is up to you, the American people. If you are ready, if you believe that we can go ahead and tell the lobbyists their days of setting the agenda in Washington are over, they have not funded my campaign, they will not run my White House, they will not drop out. If you're ready for change, we can stop talking about the outrage of 47 million people without health insurance. We can start finally doing something about it. And this is personal for me. My mother died of cancer when she was 53 years old. And that was hard enough, but I remember her reading insurance forms in the last months of her life because she had gotten a good job. And the insurance company was saying, well, maybe this is a pre-existing condition. We don't have to pay your medical bills. So I know what it's like to see a loved one suffer, not just because they're sick, but because of a broken healthcare system. And it is wrong. And that is why I put forward a plan that says every American will get healthcare that is at least as good as the healthcare I have as a member of Congress. And they will not be excluded for pre-existing conditions, and we will negotiate with the drug companies for the cheapest available price on drugs. And if you already have health insurance, we are going to lower your premiums by $2,500 a year. And we are going to save money by emphasizing prevention so that children aren't going to the emergency room for treatable illnesses like asthma. We don't have high rates of diabetes. We're going to have a health care system, not a disease care system. And we are going to look after our providers. We are going to make sure that our nurses aren't overworked and have too many patients. Nurses. And we are not going to wait 20 years from now or 10 years from now to do this. We will do this by the end of my first term as president. Get every child ready for school. I won't just talk about how great teachers are. I will reward them for their greatness by giving them higher salaries. We will have the highest standards because we have to ramp up our standards. Our math and our science education has to drastically improve. If we are to compete, we have to produce more scientists, more engineers, more technical workers across the board. So we're going to have the highest standards, but we will not just measure those standards by a single high-stakes standardized test, because we want our teachers teaching art and music.
Against those who would do us harm.
by keeping you safe means maintaining our military, which means training our troops properly and equipping them properly and putting them on proper rotations and making sure that we are treating them with honor and dignity and respect. But it also means using our military wisely. And the war in Iraq was unwise. And that's why I opposed this war from the start. In 2002, I said this was a bad idea and we should not go. This war in 2009, and I will bring our troops home. But I don't want to just end this war, I want to end the mindset that got us in the war. But leaders we detested and despised. And I was told, oh no, you can't do that. That would be naive. That would be irresponsible. I said, watch me. Because I remembered what John F. Kennedy said. He said, we should never negotiate out of fear, but we should never fear to negotiate. Strong countries and strong presidents talk to their adversaries and tell them where America stands. And when we do that, hold on a second, young lady. You okay? Why don't you sit down? So somebody guide her out and let her sit down because she's just feeling a little pain. And she's fine. You probably didn't eat lunch. That's the problem. She'll be okay. Why don't you help? Somebody help her just sit. Somebody help her sit down. Can we get a chair on the side where somebody can sit down and just, there's a chair over here. Make a path. Make a path. She's gonna be okay. Let her just sit there. And if we've got an EMT, if we have an EMT, that'd be great. She probably needs just some juice or something. She's gonna be all right. She's just feeling pain. She'll be all right. Where was I? We're gonna negotiate. See, what I want to do is I want to be able to go before the world community, before the United Nations, and I want to be able to say that America is back. America is back and we are ready to lead. Now we're going to lead on terrorism. We're going to lead on nuclear weapons, locking them down. But we are also going to lead on climate change. We're also going to lead on pandemic. We're going to lead on bringing an end to the genocide in Darfur. We are going to lead in helping poor countries set up a public health infrastructure to deal with the devastation of HIV/AIDS. We're going to lead in observing human rights and civil rights. And we're going to close Guantanamo. We're going to restore habeas corpus. And if you are ready for change, you just might elect a president who has taught the Constitution, who believes in the Constitution, and who will obey the Constitution. This is what is possible, if you believe. But I have to tell you, there are a whole lot of folks out there who are telling you you shouldn't believe it. They're telling you, you know what, Obama may give a good speech. He may have great policy proposals. But the truth is that he hasn't been in Washington that long. So we need to season and stew him a little bit more and boil all the hope out of him. And then maybe he'll be ready 20 years from now. I have to say this argument doesn't seem to be working very well. Because the American people understand that the last thing we need is to have the same old folks doing the same old things over and over and over again. We need something new. We need to turn the page. So that's one set argument. Then another set argument says, well, I like this one. He may be too nice to go against those mean old Republicans. Yeah, we've been hearing that from Senator Clinton lately. And I have to say, it is true that I am not somebody who is knee-jerk about the political battles we've been having. See, I think that we have been spending so much time on our differences that we never seem to spend time on what we have in common. I think that we can reach out and find common ground. I think when you know who you are and you know who you're fighting for and what you stand for, then you don't have to be afraid to talk to the other side. Forward to a debate with John McCain. I think it will be fun. I admire John McCain for his half century of service. He has done extraordinary things. But what I also know is that he wants to perpetuate the failed Bush economic policies and the failed Bush Iraq policy, and the American people know those things have not worked, and we want to move on to a new future. I'm happy to have that debate, and I'm ready to have the debate, because one of the things that I can tell you is, if I'm having a debate with John McCain, he won't be able to say, well, you supported the war too. Because I didn't. He won't be able to say, you gave Bush the benefit of the doubt on Iran, because I haven't. He won't be able to say that, you don't believe in talking to your enemies, because I said I have. The point is that I have the capacity to draw a clear contrast, a sharp contrast with George Bush and with John McCain and with Mitt Romney and with Mike Huckabee. Whoever is on the other side, we will be able to say, we are not with you on this. We will work with you on a brighter future for America, but on foreign policy, we have a clear distinction. And that is what we need to make sure we offer in this next election. A clear contrast, a clear break with Bush and with Cheney and with Tom DeLay and Dick Armey and all those folks. And I'm going to wrap up. Oh, yeah, come on. You got stuff to do. Last argument that's been made is interesting. This is the most interesting one. People have been saying, you know, Obama, he's a talker, but not a doer. He talks about hope all the time. You know, he's so naive. He's so idealistic. He's a hope monger. This is the argument I've been hearing lately. You know, look, it's true, I do talk about hope all the time. And out of necessity, because the odds are I should not be standing here. I was born to a single mom. My dad left when I was two. I was raised by a single mom and my grandparents. And all they could give me was love, an education and hope. That was my inheritance. And so, you know, we put hope on our signs. And I gave a speech in Boston about hope, and I wrote a book called The Audacity of Hope. But in criticizing me for, quote-unquote, being inspiring, the implication is somehow that I'm not a realist. The notion is that my head is in the clouds somewhere. That, in Senator Flynn's words, I'm peddling false hopes, and I need a reality check. And I have to say, that's not what hope is. Hope is not blind optimism. Hope is not ignorance of the challenges that stand before us. Hope is not pretending that those barriers that stand between you and your dreams will just somehow go away. Hope is just the opposite. I know how hard it is going to be to bring about change in America. I know how hard it will be to make sure everybody has health care. If it was easy, it would have already been done. I know how hard it will be to change our energy policy. ExxonMobil made $11 billion last quarter. They don't want to give up their profits. I know how hard it will be to reduce poverty. Poverty in this country has built up over centuries. I know how hard it will be to fix our schools, because it's not just the teachers or the principals, but it's the parents and the students. Our attitudes are going to have to change about education. I know how hard it's going to be because I have spent my entire adult life bringing about change. I have fought in the streets as a community organizer. I have fought in the courts as a civil rights attorney on behalf of those who've been denied opportunity on the job or access to the polling places. I have fought in the legislature, and I've won my share of fights, but I've lost some too. Because good intentions are not enough if not coupled with political power and political will. I have seen how this country's judgment can be clouded by fear. Now, in that fog of fear, when 9/11 is used as a way to scare votes instead of a way to bring the country together, we can end up turning on each other. And we're made afraid of each other. We're told to fear immigrants. We're told to fear gay people. We're told to fear each other. I know that's how politics can work. But I also know this, that nothing worthwhile in this country has ever happened except somebody somewhere was willing to hope. That's how this country was founded. A group of patriots declaring independence against the mighty British Empire. Nobody gave them a shot. That's how slaves and abolitionists resisted that wicked system. How a new president charted out a course to ensure we would not remain half slave and half free. That is how pioneers struck west in search of opportunity, how immigrants traveled from distant shores. That's how women won the right to vote, how workers won the right to organize. That's how young people traveled south to march and sit in, and some were beaten, and some went to jail, and some died for freedom's cause. That's what hope is. Yes. Imagining and then fighting for and struggling for what did not seem possible before. And that's the chance we have right now. You know, there is a moment in the life of every generation, if it is to make its mark on history, when that spirit has to come through, where we shed the fear and the doubt and the cynicism, and we join together, and arm in arm, we decide to remake this country, block by block, county by county, state by state. This is our moment. This is our time. And if you will stand with me, if you will caucus for me tomorrow, cynics tell you you have to accept, but are willing to reach for what you know is possible, then I guarantee you we will win here in Washington. We will win the nomination. We will win the nomination. You and I, we will change this country and change the world. Thank you all.